We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I'm back doing this, baby. It's a Saturday morning. It's beautiful outside. We have two lousy football teams, one great pennant race, and one baseball team that's dead. And we'll talk about all of it for the next 2.5 hours. Until New York Yankee baseball. Evan Roberts with you. So, Yankee fan, let me just say this, all right? Because I understand, I am a big believer, I think I've argued with Craig about this, that I don't like stress as a sports fan, that I would rather watch my teams blow teams out. You know, when the Nets were in the playoffs, give me the 35-point victory. I don't want the stress. So I think every Yankee fan would say right now, I have enjoyed all of those non-pennant races over the last 20-plus years. Because that's the truth. If you really think about it, the New York Yankees don't have pennant races. They don't. I mean, 1995, like the beginning of the dynasty, if you will, the really tippy beginning. They had a great three-way race for a wild card spot. But that was many, many years ago. If you think about it since then, when the Yankees have made the playoffs and when the Yankees have not made the playoffs, we have not had a true day-to-day, I got to watch the scoreboard, my emotions are rocket high, then it's all the way at the bottom, day by day by day. And we have that this year. So before we get stressed and complain and break down everything wrong with this baseball team and write about this baseball team and how confused you are about this baseball team, let us cherish the fact that we here in New York City, which for the most part has had a very bad sports scene over the last decade, we have ourselves, I shouldn't say old-fashioned because it's a wild card race, but we do have, in terms of watching the scoreboard every night, a very entertaining, incredible, old-fashioned pennant race. And as we sit here today, 2 weeks away from the conclusion of the season, in my eyes, there's a three-way tie. We're at the point in the season where we're only looking at the loss column. At least I'm only looking at the loss column. You know, when I mention the loss column in April and May, you're right to make fun of me. It probably isn't something I should bring up. But when we are 2 weeks away from the end of the season, that's the column that you don't control. So as we sit here today, 2 weeks away from the conclusion of what could be a great regular season or a terrible regular season, depending on your perspective, we have a three-way tie. Now, we laid it out earlier this week. If you missed it, what would happen in a three-way tie? It's not good for the Yankees. The Red Sox would play the Blue Jays. The winner gets wild card spot numero uno. And the loser would play the Yankees. And they would get wild card spot number two. So the Yankees would only have one crack to get into the wild card game. But here's the beautiful thing. It's all in front of this team. It's all right there. We've got three games against the Red Sox next week. They've got three games against the Blue Jays. But here's, to me, really the crazy part about this season and where things stand today. I have no idea what's going to happen. And I don't think there's a Yankee fan breathing right now that can confidently say one way or the other what the heck is going to happen as we close this season. Take a look at last night for an example. Right? The game pretty much starts off in the same frustrating way as how they lost to the Orioles the day before. Because we could talk about Gary Sanchez's lousy defense behind the plate. And I'll be honest with you, I'm done. I've been a Gary defender for many years. I would just give the job to Kyle Higashioka and call it a day. Because the truth is, close game late, I don't trust him defensively, and he's hitting 208. So he's not doing enough offensively for me to say I can live with the unknown defensively. So that's just me. But it wasn't just the wild pitches in the ninth inning. It was the Yankees' inability to get a big hit, which I think if you needed to define this season in any way, that's how you would define it, their inability to get a big hit. So the game started off the same way. Guys on base, double play, see you later. But two things happened last night that we haven't seen a lot of. Number one, Corey Kluber was actually really, really good. Who the heck saw that coming as he gave them six scoreless innings? And then the Yankees finally had an offensive explosion led by Joey Gallo. The other thing I didn't see coming, none of us saw coming, Craig, or maybe it was a caller, but either way, Craig or a caller came up with the idea that Brett Gardner in a lot of ways is like the coach's kid, continuing to play every day really because he's liked. But I think we all have to admit the hottest hitter on the New York Yankees right now is Brett Gardner. And Aaron Boone needs to find a way, and he has, to get Brett Gardner in the lineup every single night. I can't believe I'm uttering that sentence, but it's true. Because we're at the point in this season where you truly do have to ride the hot hand. But last night was an example of, I have no idea what to expect the last 2 weeks. You get a really solid performance by Corey Kluber. He wasn't dominant, but he did a pretty good job, induced a couple of double plays. There wasn't a lot of hard contact against him, and gave you six innings, especially for a bullpen that you don't trust. You don't want to ask for 15 outs from your bullpen. You may have to do that today with Luis Gil on the mound. So number one, Corey Kluber gives you his best performance in months. Obviously, he missed a lot of time. And then we see the potential of this Yankee offense by banking home runs all over the building. So for one night, you went to sleep as a Yankee fan feeling good. But then you take the way you felt the day before against the Orioles and the way they lost that game, and you're thinking doom and gloom. And I can promise you this, as the Yankees continue this series against the Cleveland Indians and then three games against Texas and then obviously the gauntlet that they're going to face the final week of the year against the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, and Tampa Bay. There are going to be a lot of highs and there's going to be a lot of lows because that's basically what this season has been. This season has been the definition of a roller coaster. And if they can get there and they can get to the one-game playoff and they've got Gerrit Cole on the mound, you feel good about your chances. Are the Tampa Bay Rays a better baseball team? Have they clearly proven to everybody, including myself, I've always been skeptical of the Rays, but have they clearly proven they're a better team than the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Blue Jays? They have. They clearly have. I watched a little bit of them last night. I know the game doesn't matter, but I'm flipping around on my iPad while I'm at the Met game last night. Why I'm at the Met game? I mean, I'll get into it if you really care. Like, why am I still subjecting myself to going to Citi Field? Really, the answer is to skip traffic. It'd be a lot of traffic if I left Manhattan at 6:30 at night after the show. So I figured take the train to Citi Field, hang out for a few hours, watch the Mets, watch all the other games on my tablet, especially the Yankee game, and I got myself a fun Friday night. But I watched the Tampa Bay Rays erase a three-run deficit as if it was no big deal in the bottom of the ninth inning. They're a hell of a team. But in a best-of-five series, anything can happen. Look, right now, Nestor Cortez, and this is amazing to me, Nestor Cortez looks like a stud. That's why I tweeted the other day. It reminds me of Sean Chacon from 2005. A guy literally coming out of nowhere and becoming a stalwart in your rotation. He's legitimately, if the Yankees win the wild card game, he's my game one starter in the American League Divisional Series. And I wouldn't even blink. I wouldn't even hesitate because he's been that good. But right now, buckle up. Because this is going to be a roller coaster. It's going to be a roller coaster with this bullpen. It was nice to see what Michael King did last night. And here's the truth. Same thing with the lineup, with riding the hot hand. That's what Boone's got to do with this bullpen. You know, Michael King last night pitched a very quick and efficient seventh inning. And at that time, the game was close. So I'm thinking to myself, as I'm watching this, do you ask him to go pitch the eighth inning? Or are you going to go to the formula and say, all right, it's a close game? Because remember, at the time, it was 3-0. So it was actually 2-0, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it was actually just a 2-0 game. Do they ask King to come out for the eighth, or do they go to the formula with Chad Green? Now, I understand that Aaron Boone is going to continue to trust Chad Green because he sort of has to. There aren't a lot of guys in that bullpen you can trust. But when King looks as good as he did
in that seventh inning, you ride him for the eighth. And I think that's the way Aaron's got to manage down the stretch, and it's how he has managed down the stretch. Same thing with the lineup. You got to play the guys that deserve it. Joey Gallo hit two home runs last night. His bat's got to be in the lineup. Brett Gardner continues to produce. I got to find a way for him in the lineup. And look, the odd man out right now is Luke Voit, which we wouldn't have said 2-3 weeks ago. And maybe we don't say that next week. I don't know. But for all the screaming and belly aching I do and everyone else does about riding the hot hand in April, May, and June, and let's give off days in April, May, and June, and let's manage our bullpen in April, May, and June, this is not April, May, and June. This is do or die time. This is, I don't care if I think you need an off day. I don't care if, well, I like this matchup. Here's the matchup I like. A guy's hitting. Brett Gardner's hitting. Brett Gardner deserves to play every day. And to Aaron Boone's credit, he's doing it. But the fear is this bullpen. As good as Michael King looked last night, the fear is Chad Green, Aroldis Chapman, close game, Boston Red Sox, J.D. Martinez on, two out. What the heck's going to happen? But that's what this season is. And that's what those games will be, a gigantic roller coaster. You look at the schedule, and it's crazy when you look at these schedules because even in the National League, the Cincinnati Reds are playing a series against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Then they're playing the L.A. Dodgers. So you say, oh, the Reds will beat up the Pirates, and they'll lose to the Dodgers, and the opposite has happened. So look, when you see this schedule and you see the fact that the Boston Red Sox are playing the Baltimore Orioles and the Toronto Blue Jays have a bunch of games against the Baltimore Orioles and the Toronto Blue Jays have a bunch of games against the Minnesota Twins. Look, on paper, the Blue Jays should win all of those games. But as we saw last night, who the heck knows? So it's really going to come down to these six games. It's going to come down to beating them head-to-head when you face them. And if the Yankees don't make the postseason, if they come up short in this chase for the wild card spots, we're going to look back at the Orioles. That's what we're going to do. We're going to look back at 11-8 against the Baltimore Orioles. And not just 11-8 against the Baltimore Orioles. The games against the Orioles, they should have won. The games against the Orioles, they blew. Because when you look at the rest of this division, and the story hasn't fully been written yet with the Red Sox and Blue Jays because they still have games left, but the Red Sox are 10-4 against the Orioles. And if they take care of business this weekend, that may look like 12-4 against the Orioles. Plus, they've got more games against them. The Blue Jays are 11-5 against the Baltimore Orioles. They will play the Orioles to wrap up the regular season in a couple of weeks. And then we all know about Tampa. I mean, what they did to the Orioles is not human. They went 18-1 against them. So if they miss out on the postseason, yeah, you're going to look back at that. But cherish this. Because when you think about this franchise over the last 25 years, and this is not a knock on them. This is not a critique. They weren't in pennant races, mainly because it was already decided by the time we got to September 19th. If you look back, actually today's the 18th, right? Whatever, 18th, 19th, 20th. If you look back at past September 20ths in New York Yankee history, you're going to notice something. Pennant races are mostly decided. You know, maybe a divisional race, but you know you're in the playoffs. But for the most part, you know if you're going to October or not. So this is something we're not used to, a true pennant race for these two wild card spots. And I got a funny feeling. I got a funny feeling that we're going to get more than just a wild card game. that we may actually get some one game playoffs. And by the way, they got the rotation set because they got Gerrit Cole scheduled for the first game against the Red Sox next week. They have Gerrit Cole scheduled for the last game against the Blue Jays the week after. And then they'd have them lined up either on 3 days rest to pitch game 162. And we know, hey, case of emergency, sure, he could pitch on 3 days rest. We saw it in the playoffs last year. Or lined up for the wild card game or lined up for a potential one game playoff. And that's what you're hoping as a Yankee fan. Can you hand the baseball to Gerrit Cole with a chance to make the postseason? Now, we also have the continuing fallout of the Giants from Thursday night. And really, Thursday night was the moment that the honeymoon ended. You know, right now, Coach Sala is going through a honeymoon. the New York Jets could win 4 or 5 games, which is my expectation. And barring something very unforeseen, all of us as Jet fans are going to feel good about Robert Saleh and the future. I actually remember a few years ago when the Miami Dolphins hired Brian Flores, and the expectations for them in year one were that they were going to be awful. They were going to be a 2-win team. They were going to be terrible. And the Dolphins went out there and won 5 games. And there was a lot of giddiness about, all right, we're moving in the right direction. And I remember saying about Brian Flores, the same thing with Joe Judge. It'll be the same thing with Coach Saleh next year. It's very easy to meet expectations when there are no expectations. It's very easy when the expectations for your team are to win 2 or 3 games. You go out and win 5, and all right, you got the program turned around. That was the feeling about Brian Flores. And to his credit, the following year, which was last year, the Dolphins won 10 games. They doubled their win total. The expectations were raised. Right now, we're at a moment where the expectations are raised. I remember saying this during the offseason. I don't think I was alone. I think Giant fans felt this way too, especially after signing Kenny Golladay, especially knowing Daniel Jones is going into his 3rd year. This is the year. They have to win now. Now, look, Daniel Jones, I thought, played the best game of his NFL career on Thursday night against Washington, so it's certainly not on him. But now it's about winning. And for the first time since Joe Judge took over, there was a football game played in which you could walk away from it saying, wow, the coaching in this game was terrible. And trust me, one thing we know in New York is bad coaching, because we've seen a lot of it, whether it's Pat Shurmur, whether it's Ben McAdoo. You want me to bring the Jets in? Fine. Whether it's Todd Bowles, whether it's Adam Gase, we have identified bad coaching a lot. Now, I'm not telling you Joe Judge is a bad coach. I'm not telling you he's going to be fired at the end of the year. But what I will tell you is Thursday night was unacceptable. And you could take your pick on what was the most unacceptable thing. And as far as the Dexter Lawrence offside is concerned, look, we all saw that video yesterday afternoon, that kind of replay. To me, Dexter Lawrence was not offsides. After looking at that slow-mo, it looked like he timed the snap so perfectly and should not have been called for offsides, okay? We could all agree on it. We could all disagree on it. Whatever. That's not even my point. That's not even what I'm referring to when you talk about bad coaching in this game. Bad coaching in this game, and it's not just Joe Judge. We could also look at Patrick Graham, and I don't know what the heck has happened to Patrick Graham. Number one is coming out of a timeout on 3rd and 1 from the 2 at the end of the first half. That defensive setup was embarrassing. They basically handed 6 points to the Washington football team. The penalties in general, embarrassing. We talk about Darius Slayton missing an easy touchdown catch that changes the game. Fair game. Darius Slayton makes that play. The Giants win. It's like a 98% shot the Giants win. And while the throw wasn't perfect, it was good enough. It's the way I look at it if you want to get into the debate of, well, it was a little bit too far. Look, was it a perfect pass? No. But Darius Slayton's got to make that play and he knows it. But what's bad about that is that was first down. Right after that, they got a 5-yard run from Saquon Barkley, which I think was his biggest run outside of the home run ball from earlier in the game. And then somehow, some way, the disciplined New York football Giants got called for back-to-back false starts. What? I literally thought I was watching Adam Gase. I had flashbacks. I was sweating in my house. I said, whoa, I thought I got rid of Adam Gase. Yeah, how the hell does that happen? And obviously the big one, and to me this is the biggest one, because this is really what comes down to your mentality. What is your mentality as a head coach in the NFL? And I will exonerate Jason Garrett to a degree, because I thought Jason Garrett called a pretty good game on Thursday. I've been critical of him. I've heard Craig defend him against me. I thought his play calling was fine. He finally went to RPOs with Daniel Jones. He finally said to himself, look, let's take advantage of what has been his most effective tool in the National Football League. And that's his legs. But after James Bradbury tries to save his game, because he was brutal in this game, with that huge interception, and you've got the football at the Washington 20, and there's 2 minutes to go, and Washington has their full allotment of timeouts. Time is not a factor. The reason time's not a factor is because between the 2-minute warning and Washington's 3 timeouts, if I just run the football and get nothing out of it, they're getting the ball back with 2 minutes to go. period. 2 minutes to go in the NFL when they only need a field goal? That's an eternity. 2 minutes to go when they only need a field goal against a defense that, I don't know, like 10 minutes ago allowed Washington on two freaking plays to go 75 yards? That's what the defense did. They let J.D. McKissic go how many yards? And then Ricky Seals-Jones seal it with a 19-yard touchdown. Two plays. Two plays. That's what the defense did, you know, how many minutes earlier? And the decision from this head coach was, again, I'm having flashbacks because I've seen this before. We've all seen this before. The conservative nature of, okay, I'm just going to hand the football to Saquon because that's a great idea. Because Saquon Barkley was just tearing it up yesterday or Thursday night. And that's the guy I want to hand it to in between the tackles. Let me give it to Saquon. 1 yard, 2 yard. All right, I'll give it a shot on 3rd and 7 and see what happens. Boom, 3 and out. Great. Graham Gano's automatic. He hits the field goal. But now you're trusting your defense to get off the field. And considering how that defense had played, why the hell would you trust them? So on all of those levels, that's why that was the worst coach game we've seen. Patrick Graham, too. Joe Judge is the CEO, so you always start with the head coach. But sure, if you want to get specific, Patrick Graham's defensive play calling over the first 2 weeks of the season has been putrid. I can't explain it. The missed tackles, putrid. James Bradberry, who I thought was one of the best defensive players in the NFL last year, all pro worthy, has been terrible outside of the interception. It's tough to explain. I mean, it's tough to understand it. But here's the bottom line. It's time to win. This is not a rebuilding year. This is not a honeymoon year. This is not a we're just looking for competence year. This was as, and still is, a year in which the New York Giants have to win more games than they lose, something they haven't done in years. Is the season over? I know why it feels that way. I know why it felt that way going into Thursday night. But look, of course it's not over. Of course, if they go out and beat Atlanta in 10 days, you'll start to say, all right, here we go. All right, here we go. But the schedule gets daunting, and the Giants are going to have to beat teams they're better than. In my opinion, and you could disagree with this, it's totally fine, they lost a game on the road to a team they were better than, a team they should have beaten, a team they have beaten over the last couple of years. So, look, in the moment, it feels like their season is over, sure. Certainly going into the game, it felt like the season was on the line. But things can change on a dime. The question is, will they? And do you have the trust that it will? Right now, Joe Judge is losing the trust of the Giant fan. So we'll get your calls about that. We can mix in Mets if you want. The Mets stink. Their season's over. The only interesting thing about the Mets, for me as a fan, is what the heck they're going to do next and who they're going to hire, including the sexy rumor that's been going around over the last 48 hours. We'll talk a little fantasy football later as well with Brad Evans, who does a great job. And, of course, we'll chat with you. Toll-free number is 877-337-6666. Evan Roberts on a Saturday until New York Yankee baseball.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Oh, that's adorable. That's adorable, Big Zoo.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing?
Oh, I didn't see that coming. I didn't see that coming. I thought it was the Welcome Back Cotter theme. I like that, though. I'm no music expert, as you may hear, Monday through Friday, 2 to 6, 2 to 7, with me and Craig. But I do know the theme to Welcome Back Cotter, that's for sure. And I do like those mashups. Is that considered a mashup, Big Zoo?
I don't know if it would be considered a mashup. I believe it would be referred to as sampling.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah, right. I like that, though. I definitely do. By the way, so the Met game was 4 hours last night, which is ridiculous. I love baseball. It's my favorite sport in the entire world. A four-hour game for a 4-3 game is insane. So I get home very, very late last night. Everybody's sleeping. And I needed to watch Dark Side of the Ring. Have you heard what they did 2 days ago on this Vice Network, Dark Side of the Ring, which is a show that's been on for a while? And they kind of take you behind the scenes in pro wrestling, dark stories, sad stories, depressing stories. They did a whole thing about what's called the flight from hell, in which all these wrestlers got drunk and did some pretty inappropriate things while on a plane. I would advise anybody. I don't even know if you like wrestling, because if you like wrestling, sure, you should watch it. But my God, some of the things that happened on that plane was mind-blowing. And so I watched that. Now it's 1 a.m. and I'm like, man, I got to keep going. I'm just going to stay up all night. And I did see the end of that Giant Brave game. Boy, I tell you, the Mets have really messed up. Everything was breaking their way. The Atlanta Braves are struggling. The wild card race had come back to them. God, so pathetic. And I'm watching the end of that game, and I'm thinking to myself, why am I watching this? Like, even though it's a great race in the NL West, and I am intrigued by the Giant Dodger thing and the wild card race, I'm a baseball fan. It just ticks me off. It just, the whole thing ticks me off. Because if they were competent, I'm not even saying great. If they were competent, they'd be in a real pennant race. And they were never in a pennant race. It was a Fugazi pennant race. The Yankees are in a pennant race, all right? This is a true, I'm looking at the scoreboard every 5 seconds kind of pennant race. All right, let's get to your calls. 877-337-6666. Jeff in the Bronx. What's up, Jeff?
Evan, welcome back. I missed you on Saturday morning.
I missed you. That's why I'm back.
A couple quick points on the Mets, but as somebody that DVRs a lot of games, like myself, and I know you do, I know you and Craig were talking about, you know, you missed the fact that you can't check in on other scores. I don't know if you have an iPhone, but just ask Siri. She'll tell you what the score is.
You're right. So you're right, okay? And I've worked around this. So most nights I get home. Last night was different because I went to the game, but on nights where I don't go to the game, obviously I get home, I start everything from the beginning. And you're right. I could ask Siri. I could block the scores on the MLB app where it's called hide scores and then go to the game I want to see and see the score. So you're right about all that. Here's the problem. I like to get to the game and put it on and see an at-bat. Oh, there's two on, two out. Let me put it on. And the risk with doing that is they're always flashing the other scores on that screen. So you're right. There's a way to check the scores without having the Mets or Yankees spoiled, but you can't watch the game without the risk that all of a sudden they're going to flash up the Mets are losing 5-2. That's the problem.
No, I understand. But if you just wanted to know, you know, obviously it doesn't matter anymore for the Mets, but if you wanted to know, you know, how the Braves are doing, just say, what score the Braves game, and she'll tell you the score.
Now, you are right.
About the Mets, and I was talking to Zoo about this, you know, like, it's just so frustrating because, like, as you were saying a minute ago, everything was basically in our own control. I mean, the Braves have been playing like garbage. The Padres, who were, you know, mid-season were competing with the Giants and Dodgers, are now, you know, floundering. You know, the Cardinals really didn't make any big moves at the deadline, and they're now leading the wild card. It's just so frustrating as a Mets fan, and I really don't want to think about 2022 yet because I know there's still a few weeks left, but am I unrealistic to think that we can bring back most of these guys that are going to be free agents? Like, am I trying to be too much as a optimistic?
Well, why do you want to do that? Why do you want to do that? This team is going to finish under 500. This team was a huge failure. This team collapsed down the stretch. Tell me why you would want to bring most of those guys back.
Because I'll tell you, you know, the guy, we have a lot of the Stromans, the Javier Baez. I don't want to bring everybody, but I, you know, the Mets, we haven't had these kind of athletic players in a really, really long time. And, you know, the way they act on, you know, as a team, and even, you know, even when they give the Mets beat, you know, nonsense, when they ask them bad questions, I like that stuff. We haven't had that edge in a really, really long time.
And here's I get what you're saying, but here's what's complicated about all this. The Mets have a ton of questions amongst the guys that can leave in free agency. You mentioned Marcus Stroman. We'd all agree Marcus Stroman's had a really good year this year. Marcus Stroman has done his job this year. Javier Baez, outside of the thumbs down nonsense, has been a very productive Met since they've acquired him. Those two guys are key free agents. Based on performance, you're right. Bring them back. Now, you wouldn't say that about Michael Conforto. He is starting to show a little bit more of a pulse recently, but based on performance, you wouldn't want to bring him back. But here's the problem, and I have not formulated a plan yet on what I would do. I always try to do that every offseason. This is what I would do if I'm the Mets, if I'm the Yankees. What's so complicated for them is the idea of bringing back this team seems like an awful idea considering what this team did. So why would I have an urge to bring back this core? And to pay Baez and Stroman, which would mean pay raises, means, are you going to be able to pay anybody else? And if you're not paying anybody else, how are you getting better? How are you changing from what was an overall really disappointing season? That's the problem. That's why I'm still thinking about it. And I am starting to think about it. You know, the Yankee fan calls in right now and asks about 2022. I always say, come on, what are you doing? You're still involved in this season. Someone calls in about next year for the Jets and Giants. We're not there yet. We're still focused on this season. I can tell you as a Met fan, I am done with this season. Now, I'm still watching every game because I'm a fan slash sucker. I'm still going to a bunch of games because I'm a fan slash sucker. But mentally, yeah, I'm thinking about next year. And it's tough. It's not easy. It's very difficult to kind of put together, all right, this is what I would do to make this team better, considering they were so flawed. They're going to finish under 500. Why would you want to bring that back? Richie in Queens. What's up, Richie?
Hey, Ev. Great to have you back on a Saturday. The only time I can get a hold of you is on a Saturday. But
how about, I've been meaning to say this to you for a while, how about your freaking baseball team? Oh, my God.
Well, you know what, Ev? I've been meaning to call you during the year. Look, 78 wins was the prediction. I didn't have high hopes. My brother and I listened to every game, watched every game. I always felt like, you know, we get to 81. It's going to be really tough against the Padres and the Dodgers. If you're telling me in the beginning of the year that I got a three, I do have a three-game lead, not two, because we have the tiebreaker. We're 10-9 against them.
Very true.
It's been an amazing. It's an amazing year, Ev, and Kapler obviously has been phenomenal. I've found no flaws with him. The way he's treated the pitching staff, the way he's used his lefty-righty combinations. Obviously, my core three have been, I mean, last year they were talking about what they're going to do with how they're going to dump their payroll, their salaries. They just gave Crawford a two-year deal. Belt has been amazing. Posey slowed down a little bit, but still hitting 300. But the guys like Ruff, the guys like Flores, my outfield of guys like Yastrzemski's had an off year, but the pitching's been phenomenal. It's an amazing, amazing story. You know, I still kept waiting for them to give up the division, but with three-game lead, with 15 to go, we do have injuries to Cueto. We have an injury to Cueto, and when there's another pitcher that's
though Richie, right now, I do want to tell you something. You actually don't have a three-game lead because you would actually play a one-game playoff for the National League West if you guys finished tied.
Even with the fact that we're one game up
yes.
on them.
Yes. They would be, yeah, I know the loser goes to the wild card game, but yeah, they would still, because these are the rules that they have, you guys would actually still play a one-game playoff for the division.
Okay.
And then obviously you lose that game, you're in the wild card game. So we could very well see Giants-Dodgers for the National League West.
Yeah, and I still fear the Dodgers, obviously, with Scherzer and Bueller.
Sure.
And you got to, and Milwaukee, too, is very much under the radar, too. Their pitching is great. Hey, Ev, real quick, your Mets. Total disaster this year. Didn't see it coming. McNeil has been the biggest guy that I've been on. I think he's horrendous at this point. I don't know what happened to the 320 hitter. Smith is in the background. What's happened? I totally agree. You can't bring this team back. As far as the football Giants, I called Moose and Maggie during the week. I'm tired of work in progress. I'm tired when they lost the first game. It's early in the season. What that game was on Thursday night was horrible when they got that ball back. And it's in their hands, and you touched it because everything you said I agree with. Garrett's got to say, we cannot play for three games. We cannot hand the ball off two times in a row. We can't have faith in our running game that's been horrendous. An end around, let Jones put the ball in his hands. Get a first down, even if you don't score, run the clock out. It was a terrible, terrible loss. It is not over with 15 games to go. But it seems like the same old Giants. Ev, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, man. Yeah, that phrase, by the way, which has always annoyed me as a Jet fan, that's how you feel about the Giants over the last 5 years, the same old comment. And remember last year when the Giants got off win-loss record-wise to a terrible start, there was optimism because they were in every game. They weren't winning the close games, but they were in every game against teams that were better than them, starting right out of the gate with the Pittsburgh Steelers, the game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There were a lot of games early in which you said, we competed, we were in it. Now it's time to win. Now it's time to seal those close games. And by the way, what's so crazy about the other Giants, they're an old veteran team. Like, the San Francisco Giants came out of nowhere, and a lot of times when baseball teams come out of nowhere, because it happens, it's baseball, it's great, it's young players developing maybe a little earlier than you thought. That's usually what happens. Ah, they came a year or two early. Buster Posey is 34 years old. He's had a really good year. Brandon Belt is 33 years old. He's had a very good year. I mean, Brandon Crawford is an MVP candidate. He's 34 years old. Evan Longoria, when he's played, is 35 years old. Wilmer Flores, who you mentioned, is pushing 30. So they are, look, they're a fluke. And I mean that with respect to all the Giant fans out there, all, you know, 30 of you living here in New York. They're a fluke. I think we could all kind of accept that. You know, Anthony Desclafani and Kevin Gausman are having great years. They're a fluky baseball team, but it's incredible. And yeah, if you finish tied for the division, even if you go to the wild card game, there would be a one-game playoff. So that game would be in San Francisco, Giants-Dodgers for the National League West. Now, I have to admit, while I'm excited to be back doing Saturdays, mostly to talk to you guys, the thing I am most excited about is getting to play the Wendy's Yankee Turning Point of the Game contest, baby. Sometimes on Saturdays during the summer, I would wake up and on my own guess what I thought Sweeney picked as the Yankee Turning Point. Now I get to do it for real. You know, Wendy's is the official hamburger of the New York Yankees. And if you're the first caller right now to correctly identify yesterday's Yankee Turning Point of the Game at 866-540-WFAN, you'll receive a Wendy's prize pack, including a Wendy's gift card, all from your flagship station for New York Yankees baseball, The Fan. I'll guess it in a little bit. Obviously, you get the first crack to win the contest. I think this one's tricky. Like, when I woke up this morning, obviously the first thing I thought about was Yankee Turning Point. And I was like, man, I don't know where I'm going to go with this one. But maybe you'll win, and maybe I'll keep my streak going. Because Big Zoo was scoring me. Wasn't I like 6-1 before I went on respite? I mean, I was...
Yeah, you were in a good flow.
I was rolling, man.
One loss was it, for sure.
That was it! I was dominating. So we'll see. I mean, maybe I'm rusty. Maybe I'm Kenny Golladay. Maybe I'm just, you know, it's been a while. Maybe I don't know. We'll find out coming up. Plus more of your phone calls and the sexy, intriguing rumor involving the future of the Mets front office. Plus, we'll talk fantasy football later on as well. Evan Roberts here on The Fan till Yankee pregame.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Oh, an intriguing Yankee lineup. We'll give that to you in a couple of minutes. Toll-free number is 877-337-6666. Rick in Tampa. What's up, Rick?
Yo, Evan. What's up, buddy?
Did you survive week one of your knockout pool, Rick?
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate it. I did play camp on one. I had Tennessee on almost all of mine.
Right? Oh.
I'm alive in two because of your pick, and also I had the Rams. So, I mean, oh, yeah. It was.
Well, Tampa Bay was a channeling of Joe Benengo, because Joe, if you recall, would always be big on the champion coming off the Super Bowl, the Thursday night opener. He always loved the karma of it. And so I channeled him a little bit and said, you know what? In honor of my former partner, I'm going Tampa. And they scared the daylights out of me, as they did everyone else. But yeah, yeah. But they pulled it off, yes.
I know. So I'm hanging on a thread now, a couple of them. But so we'll see how that goes. But it's nice to have you back. Is Jet in preschool, or what's he going to school? Is he go to, he's four, right? Five?
Yeah, he just turned 5 years old on September 11th. He started kindergarten, believe it or not. So it's crazy.
Oh, he's got
crazy.
Jets lunchbox. Jets or Mets lunchbox? Tell me.
New York Mets lunchbox.
Or Nets. All right, which one is it? Please reveal. A lunchbox reveal for Evan. All right, buddy. Hey, you know, regarding, real quick, the Yankees and the Giants, and I'm glad you, I tweeted to you saying, please call out the coach of the Giants, because you're right. The honeymoon is over with him. I don't even want to hear another press conference from any coaches. I want to know maybe who is not playing for injury. And you know what? Just shut up and win. They have to win Atlanta. I don't want to hear nothing until they beat Atlanta, because, you know, with 17 games this year, 0-3 is the new 0-2, and it's going to be it's going to be such a mind set in their heads that they can't win if they don't beat Atlanta. So I don't want to hear about it. Just go out and win that game. And regarding the Yanks, hanging on by a thread here, and I'm counting on Severino and Drummond and even Jonathan to come back to strengthen the bullpen, because none of our starters can go more than six innings. For us to really pull this out, we're going to have them in the bullpen, because I don't trust the bullpen. And the Rays, I don't think those last three games are going to be playing for anything. They already have pretty much the best record.
They're not going to be playing for anything, but I do wonder, you know, certain teams handle this very, very differently. Maybe the Yankees will get owed something back from Tampa, because if you remember years and years ago when the Tampa Bay Rays won, I think it was the wild card spot in game 162, the year the Red Sox collapsed, and Evan Longoria hit that game-winning, wild card-winning home run. The Yankees collapsed because it didn't matter to the Yankees. The Yankees had won the American League East already. So maybe there's a returning of the favor, but I don't know. That's always a tough one to read, how a team's going to handle games that, you know, may not mean anything. Because standings-wise, they should have that number one seed wrapped up if you look at how close they are, or how not close they are, to Houston or Chicago. Because right now they're 3.5 games up, which I know is not insurmountable, but, I mean, look at the Rays. They're down 4-1 in the ninth inning last night to the Tigers, and, you know, flip a switch, boom, they win. But it's going to be a day-to-day thing. One day you're going to be optimistic. One day you're going to be depressed. One day you're going to be confident. One day you're going to be, oh, my God, this is the worst. That's basically what a pennant race is. That's what it's all about. By the way, this week, and it's always earlier, it's always easier, I should say, earlier in the season with these knockout pools. And if you've never heard of one, it's basically no spread. You pick a team, they have to win. You can only use a team once. If they lose, you're dead. You're knocked out. That's it. To me, it's Green Bay, especially coming off of that embarrassment, that just pathetic, pathetic performance in week one in Jacksonville against the Saints. Plus facing a team they're 15 times better than. And I'm not a believer that this is now the demise of the Green Bay Packers. I don't see it. I don't think that's happening. So I expect them to bounce back in a big way. So pick Green Bay. If somehow they lose, sure, you can blame me. But I'm fairly confident that you'll survive week two of your knockout pool if you take Green Bay. We'll take more of your calls coming up. We'll get to the Yankee lineup. Plus, Billy Bean in New York. Evan Roberts here on The Fan till 12:25.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM, The Fan, WFAN.
Couple minutes after 11, Evan Roberts here on The Fan. We got a Yankee afternoon baseball game, the second to last home Saturday afternoon Yankee Stadium affair, as they take on the Cleveland Indians, look to make it two straight, look to continue in their battle for one of these two wild card spots. All right, I was thinking about the turning point from last night. It's tough because there's not one moment that jumps out at you. So I'm just going to go and say Joey Gallo's first home run, put him up 1-0, line drive shot down the right field line. Is that the Yankee turning point?
Runners lead, pitch swung on and drilled to right. It is high, it is far, it is gone. Let the Guardy party begin. He has just drilled a 3-run home run in the right field seats.
I mean, can I cry and complain? Am I allowed to? Because that is it's not the turning point. They were up in the game 3-0. Unless you believe the bullpen was so poised to blow the game, that's why you say a 3-run home run up 3-0 is the turning point. I'm sorry, I'm a sore loser. I don't think that should be the turning point. All right, I'll take my L. So congratulations. The Guardy party continues. And by the way, real quick, looking at the New York Yankee lineup today, Brett Gardner, rightfully so, is in the lineup again. He's batting eighth and playing center field. The guy sitting is actually going to be Anthony Rizzo. And I love it because, again, if you're going to play the hot hand, I think Anthony Rizzo is 3 for his last 22. It's not a huge sample size, but he has cooled off, made an error yesterday. So Luke Voit's going to get the start at first base. So it's DJ Voit, Judge, Giancarlo, Gallo, Glaber, Sanchez, Gardner, Urshela against Aaron Cervelli and the Cleveland Indians. Steven Howard Beach.
I have A couple things.
Steve, I complimented your Dolphins earlier today. Didn't that make you all warm and fuzzy inside?
I didn't hear that because I was getting the kids from soccer. I just turned you on. But
okay.
What I wanted to say was, Beningo's on Twitter. He's on Instagram. He's got a podcast now. The guy's making a comeback.
I know.
Honestly,
I know Joe Beningo. I know him pretty well. There is no way in the world Joseph Beningo himself is on Twitter. That cannot be real.
He is.
He has a flip phone. I saw his flip phone 2 weeks ago.
He's got a marketing company running it, and he's doing it from his basement.
Wait, hold on. Let's clarify here, because there's a lot of Beningo fans out there who are listening, saying, wait a second. So let's get this straight. So Joe Beningo has an official Twitter account. He's not running it because Joe's always said he would. I wouldn't even know. What's a tweet, bro? So it's official, but someone else is running it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he's, hold on, I'm ordering food. But yes, somebody else is running it, absolutely.
What are you ordering right now? Yeah, Wendy's?
I'm at Boston Market getting my kids some healthy food.
Good for you, man. I remember when Boston Market used to be Boston Chicken. Do you remember that?
Wait, say that again?
I said, I remember when Boston Market used to be Boston Chicken. That's what it used to be called. Then they changed the name to Market, and I'm not sure why. Maybe PETA pressured them. I have no idea.
I don't remember that at all. I just remember you eating Chipotle all the time.
But, I still do.
what I wanted to say is the Giants and the Falcons, those two teams, before the trade deadline, those teams need to blow it up. I mean, get what you can for Matt Ryan now. See if you have any value in trading Saquon. You can probably get a second-round pick for Saquon while you're at it. And the Miami Dolphins can be a beneficiary of acquiring a guy like Ryan.
You're giving up on Tua?
I haven't had any belief in Tua whatsoever from the beginning. And last week kind of proved my whole belief in that.
His
arm strength is just never going to be where it needs to be.
You're in a weird spot, and it's not a bad spot in all seriousness, because the Miami Dolphins are a legitimate division contender. They had a really good year last year. They won 10 games. They have a coach that's proving he's legit. You have a chance to make the postseason. I'm not saying you're a Super Bowl contender. I don't think you're on that level. But you're a legitimate playoff contender, and you have a complete unknown at quarterback. Now, is it fair to, quote, give up on Tua this early? Probably not, but life's not about being fair. Life, or at least sports life, I should say, is about winning. That's what it's about. A lot of things aren't fair. So I've always looked at your team, in fairness, as much as I despise your team, I've always looked at them during this offseason saying, boy, if Deshaun Watson's available, go get him. If Russell Wilson's available, go get him. And yeah, if Matt Ryan is available, even at his age, go get him. Because it's simple. Who gives me a better chance to win? And Matt Ryan would. I don't know what Atlanta is actually doing. The giant thing, I disagree with you. And I don't even know if I should address it because it's crazy. You know what I should? It really isn't that crazy. I don't want to put that down. The idea of trading Saquon. I just disagree because right now we're about to find out. And Thursday was a positive sign. The last chance, if you will, on if Daniel Jones is the future quarterback of this team. And there are a lot of people out there that say, yeah, no, I believe he is. And there's some people, we've heard from them, who say, nope, he's not the guy. And so I don't think it would make any sense to take weapons away from him in this make or break year. But I don't know what Atlanta's doing. And it's weird. This isn't baseball. You know, this isn't baseball where, all right, my team stinks, I'm out of it, I'm going to dump guys. Now, look, we've seen trades in the NFL. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. But the idea of taking a guy like Matt Ryan at the trade deadline and saying, all right, let me shop him and see what I can get for him. It just doesn't happen. Let's go to our buddy Dennis in Yonkers. How are you, Dennis?
Evan, how are you?
Excellent, man. What's up?
Good to have you back on Saturdays. I don't get a chance to call. I spoke to Mark once because I was aggravated over the giant Denver tape that I watched. But quickly, you caught the end of that baseball giant game last night?
Yes. Yes, I did.
That one took the cake.
Yes,
that
it did.
One took the cake, and that's why the DH should never be in the National League.
I know.
That
seeing
was
Kevin
a,
Gausman, was yeah.
I mean, was that an unbelievable? I promise you, since I detailed giant games to the max, that's the second ball he's pulled this year. He pulled a base hit, one of his 8 base hits, and I don't think he's pulled another ball to the right side.
Crazy!
It's a 94 mile an hour fastball, sac fly. They
Amazing.
Are. I'll correct you on one thing. They're not a fluke. You know what they have become? They're morphing into the Oakland A's and the Tampa Rays with money. And that's a lethal
combo. Yeah, here's my only question to that. Like I mentioned earlier, it's a bunch
and
of veteran.
And rebuilding the system, too.
No. And they may be doing that great, and that's fine. But the guys who are contributing, for the most part, are 33, 34, 35-year-old guys having great years.
How old is Nelson Cruz? How old is Max Scherzer? Maybe guys are finding ways to train and sustain better. I don't know.
I mean, Cruz was an addition, though, to Tampa Bay. That was them saying, all right.
And he's DH.
Right. But look, it's a great story, and I'm rooting for you. I mean, to be honest, I want you to win the National League West. I'd love to see the Dodgers in the wild card game. So I'm all in. I hope your team wins, and I was happy when Kevin Gausman gets the game-winning sack fly.
It's been an unbelievable watch. Yeah. And by the way, Capel pulls a 23-homer guy for a 6-homer guy with 2 out in the ninth, and he hits the bomb. That's what comes... Sum up the Giants, Solano for Yastrzemski. Okay, let's get to the football team because that's not been a good watch. So here's where we stand. The judge situation now is he has a McAdoo locker room. The game the other night, it's the worst thing I can say, looked like a Pat Shurmur game with disarray on the sidelines and undiscipline on the field. And I have no idea why essentially the same defense that was run last year and by every metric was ninth in the league is now, can't stop a stiff breeze. But some of the things that are happening, here's what you heard. Jay, I haven't gotten to camp. You couldn't get to camp last year. I didn't get to camp this year. I love going to camp and seeing something. You saw that McAdoo's offense didn't fit Eli right off the bat if you were at camp back then. But I heard that push-ups and laps, no unforced errors. I mean, they come out of a timeout, get a new legal procedure because the clock's running down. Somebody moves because, hey, the clock's running down. You're going to get a delay of game. That happens. What happened at the end of the game, guys running back and forth, having to take your third time out, in and out of the line. It's just total disarray. And this is everything you didn't hear from Coach Judge. And I like Coach Judge. But there's one name that's not been mentioned, and by anyone that I've heard, maybe you have, that is escaping blame, and he deserves a lot of it, and that's Dave Gettleman. Because this is still, he had a great draft. Let me qualify that. He picked Daniel Jones, who I think is going to be a really good quarterback in this league. But he's put together such a disjointed roster still. And now you're bringing in, I don't know that how close you vet him, but Kenny Galladay's screaming on the sidelines 5 minutes here. Kadarius Toney's tweeting. You better get the right guys in the locker room because it sounds like the locker room is going McAdoo's way. And those guys, you got Galladay dropping passes, and Kadarius Toney can't get on the field because if they saw something, he'd be on the field right now. And that's your issue? Those are your issues? Are you kidding me? You got to be kidding me.
I still think, Dennis, to your point, Dave Gettleman is public enemy number one for Giant fans. I just think based on what we saw Thursday night, Joe Judge temporarily has taken it away from him, and you hit on a couple of reasons why. Twice in this game, not once, twice in this game, the New York Giants were called for false starts coming out of timeouts. Man, how does that happen? One of them was in the first quarter of this game. It was a 3rd and 2. They used an early timeout. Andrew Thomas was called for a false start. The one I've mentioned a lot was after the Slayton drop, two plays later, coming out of a timeout, they were called for not one, but back-to-back false start penalties coming out of a timeout. And things like that are just so obviously on the head coach. The game plan after the Bradberry interception is so obviously on the coaching staff. The scheme defensively, which failed against Denver and failed against Washington. And I like Teddy Bridgewater, so I hate using him as an example of, well, they let Teddy Bridgewater do this. I think Teddy Bridgewater is a competent NFL quarterback. But the New York Giants, who had a really good defense last year, partially because of scheme, partially because of missed tackles, partially because guys aren't playing as well, and also because there's no pass rush. Ojulari got to the quarterback early. And that probably excited you as a Giant fan. Thinking, all right. I think that was the first drive of the game. That's right. The third and out to start the game. Here comes Ojulari off the end. 16-yard loss, sack. We're in business. That was the last time they put any kind of pressure on Heinicke. So I think overall, if we're looking at the Giants and the state of the Giants, like if I put a poll out there, I'm not going to do this one. But if I did, who are you? Who do you blame the most? Gettleman still wins these things. But I think coming off of Thursday night, based on what you saw on the field, the venom goes towards Joe Judge. Now, quickly about Golladay, because this is my biggest issue with Kenny Golladay. And I mentioned this a lot yesterday. I don't know if Craig agreed with me or not, but this is my view on this. I don't know why I was yelling at Daniel Jones. No idea. But the only way we're going to find out and the only way there could be closure to this is for Kenny Golladay to meet the media. Not for me, not for you, but for his quarterback. Because after that game, Daniel Jones was asked more about that than anything else. So Daniel Jones is now put on the spot for a few minutes to have to answer for why Kenny Golladay was clearly screaming at him. And I think it was pretty clear he was screaming at Daniel Jones. It wasn't Jason Garrett, wasn't the equipment manager, it was the quarterback. And I don't know why, none of us know why. We could speculate. We could look at when it happened in the game and say, all right, maybe he was open and he felt throw me the ball instead of, I think it was Darius Slayton on the sideline. Whatever the reason. But we haven't heard from the guy. And it's easy. It's a very, very easy interview session. Like, it ain't that complicated. You come out and you said, yeah, I was frustrated. I wasn't even mad at Daniel Jones. I was just frustrated with the way things were going. I was frustrated with myself. And by the way, this could all be BS, but it doesn't matter. This is what you can say. I was frustrated with myself. I let it out, and I was screaming, and I'm sorry. And I even apologized to Daniel after the game. Can't let it happen. He's still my guy. Let's move on. That's it. And we're done. It's not that difficult. But I thought the worst part about that wasn't just the visual on TV. It was the fact that the quarterback's got to stand there and answer everything. And we never heard from Kenny Golladay. I mean, I'm sure at some point we will. I don't think that's happened yet. If I've missed it, let me know. I was keeping track all day yesterday. I was like, when's Kenny talking? When's Kenny Golladay going to say something? What's going on? But Joe Judge is being tested right now. He's being tested in a lot of ways, not just his in-game coaching, but I think a good point was just brought up about kind of the issues that could be brewing in this locker room. Kadarius Toney complaining and then getting mad at the media. I mean, what? Look, the media is not perfect. I'll be the first to tell you, but what the heck did the media do wrong? You're the one going on Instagram complaining, or at least it looks as if you're complaining. And I'm sure Giant fans took it that way. But I guess that's the game plan sometimes. I'll just blame the media. It's all their fault. Whatever. More of your calls. Plus, do I want Billy Beane? Do I want him to be the next executive of the New York Mets? I'll give you that answer. Plus, thoughts on the Jets-Patriots game tomorrow and a fantasy football preview. Evan Roberts on the Fan till 12:25. So obviously, before the Mets make any moves, they need to hire a general manager. And if Sandy Alderson is allowed to make that decision, he will look for, well, he's already hired one. Then he hired a second. Oh, yeah. He'd be looking for his third general manager in less than a year. If it was me and I'm Steve Cohen, I'd blow the whole thing up. All right? But, look, Sandy's not going to be involved in day-to-day baseball. Steve Cohen is probably the guy making the hire. So I will get nuts if Sandy's back in some kind of business role. Theo Epstein is the dream. I don't think it's going to happen. But, of course, you make the phone call. The Billy Beane thing is fascinating. because there's a part of me that thinks, wow, this actually could happen. And keeping Sandy makes sense. He has a relationship with Sandy Alderson. Billy Bean has a history here with the Mets, even though it was a long time ago when he was a failed super prospect. And Billy Bean has been in Oakland running that organization for 30 plus years. Even longer if you go back to his time as a scout. And it's felt over the years like he's looked to leave. I remember the Red Sox made him a big offer a decade and a half ago and he didn't leave. And then he was trying to do something with Fenway Sports where he would be involved with soccer and other events. So it looked like, not that he was looking for a different job in baseball, but that he's been looking for something else. And you can understand, he's 59 years old, he's still relatively young, and he's been at the same place for a million years. And if you're Billy Bean, you have a chance to do two things you've never done. Number one, as a guy running the organization, win something. Because that's the thing Joe and I have made many comments about Billy Bean in the past, how overrated he was. What the hell has this guy won? And it's true, I stand by that. I mean, they've been to the playoffs a million times, but they've been to one American League Championship Series and they got swept. Now, is all of that on Billy Bean? Not necessarily. If you put a roster together that's good enough to win 100 games or 95 games and make the postseason, sometimes what happens in the postseason, you know, sometimes involves luck, not always. So I'm not going to tell you Billy Bean is as good as having a movie made after him. But what Billy Bean would bring, and the reason why I'd be very excited if the Mets were able to pull this off, is he gives you stability. He gives you a proven baseball executive who, while he hasn't won a championship, has had great success, really good success, if you don't want me to use the word great. And then he gets to do something he hasn't been able to do, and that's have a lot of money. The way the Oakland A's have been run over the last three decades has been pathetic. And it's not Billy Bean's fault. They're a small market joke. They couldn't make a qualifying offer to Marcus Semien. That's embarrassing. Quite frankly, that's embarrassing. They should almost fold up when you can't make a financial decision like that. It's not a 10-year contract. It's not a 5-year contract. It's a freaking qualifying offer. Billy would not have to worry about that here. And look, if he's able to bring Bob Melvin, great. Bob Melvin has been a steadying, really solid manager for the Oakland A's for a decade now. So that's a home run. I'm all in on that. Now, that doesn't mean that Billy Bean hasn't been overrated over the last 30 years. It just means that when you look at who can you hire. Look, David Stearns from Milwaukee would be a great hire. The Brewers have had underrated success over the last couple of years, and he's got that New York connection. But if I'm making a list, a dream list, a somewhat realistic dream list, number one would be Theo and number two would be Billy Bean. How about this scenario? Nah, I'm not going to say it. All right, you know what? I'll say it. Because if God forbid this happens, it'd be fascinating. What if the Yankees miss the... You know where I'm going? What if the Yankees miss the playoffs? And Hal says, I'm channeling Dad. We miss the playoffs? Brian, I love you. You've done a great job. You've been here for a million years. But we need to freshen it up a little bit. We need to shake it up a little bit. And they give him the proper, classy farewell and say, Brian, good luck on your future endeavors. Would I want Brian Cashman to run the New York Mets? Of course I would. Oh, hell yeah. Despite any critique we've had over him, on him over the last few years. Yeah. Because what you want, what I want as a Met fan is a proven winner. And we could debate who's won more and what assets they've had and what help they've had. We get it. Billy Bean's had no money. Theo Epstein's has had a ton of money. Brian Cashman's had a ton of money. But those three guys are probably Hall of Fame level executives. All three of them. You have a chance to bring them in, you do it. So I hope they could pull it off. I fully endorse it. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not, but it's certainly worth a try. And if Billy Bean is ever going to leave that cocoon in Oakland, if he's ever going to say, all right, I've had enough, I've been here forever, New York seems like the perfect place with the money to spend, with a core of players that's relatively good. You still have the best pitcher in the world if he's healthy. Pete Alonso's had a very solid season despite his, you know, 0 for 19 recently or whatever it was. So hopefully it happens, but who the heck knows? Let's get back to your calls. Ricky is in Far Rockaway. How are you, Ricky?
Evan, you're picking at my scabs talking about the Giants and Yankees. Thursday night was so excruciating. The Yankee bullpen is analogous to extreme weather events. Things that should happen to a bullpen like once every 8 to 12 years happens to the Yankee bullpen like every week or two. As far as the Giant game, how about giving some blame to Graham? I can't stand that soft zone, gives the other quarterback confidence. I wish they would have gotten Julio Jones to the Giants. I mean, I would have thrown the first in for them. All right, CBA and Hall of Fame is really why I called. Do you think there's any chance that that tax thing will be 180 next year like the first proposal has?
No. No way. First proposals never go through. I think the players are going to want that tax to be a hell of a lot higher. They're not going to accept 180.
What? They never should have agreed to any tax at all in the first
place. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm sure Donald Fear would say that. I don't think he was the one who accepted it because it's turned into like a pseudo salary cap. You know, I've paid a little bit of attention to the negotiations because that's going to be a really big deal in a couple of months with the CBA running out. And I saw some of the creative ideas on proposals. He mentioned, what he was referring to, by the way, was moving the luxury tax bill to start at $180 million. Obviously, that's what the owners would want. The players don't want any kind of tax. You know, or if there's a tax, let it be $250 because there's more money on players. What was interesting is that the owners offered a salary basement. Now, on the surface, you'd say, that's great. You know, teams like the Oakland A's, teams like the Miami Marlins, they have to spend. Why wouldn't the players love it? The players don't love it because they think, whoa, salary basement? That means they're then going to want a salary cap. So that scares them off. The interesting one was service time, because that's a big issue, you know, with guys being kept in the minor leagues because of service time. And one of the ideas I read, and it would greatly affect some of the guys in this town, was 6 years of service time or when they turn 29. So that age number would make you a free agent. So it also guarantees every young player, even if they come up at age 26, 25, they get to free agency before they turn 30. Now, I don't know what these guys are going to agree to. Hopefully they agree to something. We don't have a work stoppage. But I don't think we're going to get a clearer idea until we get closer to the deadline. But what I am curious about, because my dad was asking me this recently, and I don't know the answer. The CBA runs out, if I'm not mistaken, on December 1st. Let me Google that real quick. MLB CBA expiration. Yeah, that should come up with an answer. Okay, I'm right. December 1st. All right. Just wanted to fact check myself. If it runs out on December 1st, is there an offseason in November? Now, you know what I mean? Like, are teams going to sign free agents and make trades not knowing what the CBA is going to look like? So my guess, and it's just merely a guess, is that there would be some small moves, but nothing major would happen until the CBA is sorted out. Because it's a weird time period, December 1st. I mean, obviously, when the World Series ends, you know, first week in November, that gives you a month between the season ending and the CBA running out. So I am kind of curious what would happen, but we'll see. Joe is in New Milford. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Evan, thanks for taking the call.
No problem, man. What's on your mind?
So I want to preface my comment and question with I'm a Jets, Mets, and Knicks fan. So I kind of, learned to deal with the abuse, I guess. What strikes me as interesting with Giants and Jets fans to a certain degree is, I guess, that meme where, you know, that's my quarterback. I've been listening all morning, and a couple of the callers, you know, are still hanging on to Daniel Jones, just the same way that the Jets fans hung out to Sam Darnold. And I think the story, I guess the lesson here is that the good front offices, you know, they treat these guys like assets, right? You acquire assets, you build your team based off the quarterback contract, right? The rookie quarterback contract. The Giants, quite frankly, if they lose a couple more games, should look to ship Saquon, get whatever they can for him, acquire more assets. They need to get the idea that Daniel Jones is the guy, because he's not. And, you know, anyone can have a great season in this league, depending on how good the line is and things falling to the Orioles' schedule. And the same thing happened with the Jets. Even how many Jets fans I've heard, oh, my God, why did they get rid of Sam? Why did they get rid of Sam? And then after this first game, they say the same thing. Oh, look at the game. I was like, listen, McCaffrey had 200 yards of total offense, 9 catches, didn't drop a single one. Sam didn't have a great game. He had an okay game. The difference is, and I guess I'm wrapping it up here, is I believe in Salah because the first time in a long time, these guys want to play for the coach. I believe in Douglas. He's acquired assets and set them up. Even next year, I think they got, 4 picks in the first 2 rounds and then the top 90-something picks.
Yeah.
So I think the lesson here is, and I think it has to do with a little old-school thinking, these players, as much as we love them and we want them to succeed and we kind of take on the identity of the team as we're fans, but the reality is Gettleman's biggest mistakes were drafting Saquon high and drafting Daniel Jones. When you miss on high-round picks, you set your franchise back years. Not just a year or two. You set them back years, especially if you miss on a quarterback. So I want to hear your commentary on that. And I have one question for you.
Yeah.
Are you an AEW fan? And are you going to be at Grand Slam this week?
I will be in the building at Arthur Ashe Stadium Wednesday night. I just got my tickets. They're very good tickets. I'm very excited. So, yes, I've loved what AEW has done. It's been fun to watch. Yeah, I'm on board. I even bought the pay-per-view a couple weeks ago. I had some issues with the pay-per-view. Watching it, that is, not the actual performance, but yeah, AEW has been great. And obviously getting CM Punk and getting Bryan Danielson's been a big help. I sort of agree and disagree at the same time. Like, I think what you're saying, a lot of what you're saying is new school in that there's an expiration date on a young quarterback because you know you have to pay them. Like, we don't live in a world anymore where, yeah, it's year 3, year 4, year 5. I'm going to stick with a guy. I think a big part of why the Jets moved on from Sam Darnold, and I know there are some Jet fans who say he's not any good, and they're going to poo-poo, like our last caller did, what he did in week 1, because, oh, Christian McCaffrey's there. Yeah, you want to have weapons around your young quarterback, and you want your young quarterback to use those weapons properly. He had nothing with the Jets. He had nothing. So as much as you want to say what he did in week 1 means nothing because of Christian McCaffrey, can't you go to the opposite end and say his failures mean nothing because look what was around him here? The complete opposite of having a future Hall of Famer like Christian McCaffrey in your backfield? So I think it's more there's an expiration date on your young quarterback because you have to pay him. You don't have the luxury of keeping a guy for 4, 5, 6 years and slowly building a roster. So fair or not, while I still think Sam Darnold's going to be a good quarterback in this league, I also agreed that they needed to move on. And my reasoning for that was what I just said, that you have to pay guys. And I'd rather reset that quarterback clock with a guy like Zach Wilson. Doesn't mean I think Sam's a failure. As far as Jones is concerned, the jury is still out. This is the year where we're going to determine that, and that's why I disagree with the idea of taking a Saquon Barkley and trading him away for draft picks. Because it makes Daniel Jones' job harder. He's still a young quarterback. I want to have him surrounded with as many weapons as humanly possible. I don't want to be stripping away a guy like Saquon Barkley. And you have to hope and expect that as this season goes on, Saquon's going to get better and better as he knocks that rust off. So, look, it's very difficult and it's something that we're all trying to figure out together. Like, how do we decide if this guy is the guy or not the guy with a young quarterback? Now, how many games does it take? When does it hit you? He is the guy. He's not the guy. And it feels like we have to do this all the time. We just did it with Sam Darnold. We're doing it with Daniel Jones. We're going to have to do it with Zach Wilson. But coming off of Thursday, that you would think would swing the pendulum back towards maybe he is the guy because he was great on Thursday night. He was marvelous on Thursday night. Toll-free number 877-337-6666. Some thoughts on the Jets tomorrow. More of your calls, and we'll talk fantasy at 12 noon. How about this? Big Z, Zeno Chara, going to end his NHL career with the New York Islanders, signing a 1-year deal. Coming back to where it all began. It's been almost 20 years since Chara was an Islander, but he's going to sign a 1-year contract. Let's go to John in Newark, New Jersey. What's up, John?
Evan, how are you?
I'm good, man. What's up?
Yeah, in today's Daily News, speculation of a Kyrie for Simmons trade.
Yes.
Call me crazy, but I like it. Kyrie is perfect for Philly. Of all the places he's been, it's just what they need, a point guard who could score and who could finish. And you get a lockdown guard who can actually rebound, and you don't need the three-ring circus.
Yes, we do. I need the three. Well, you call it the three-ring circus. I call it three of the most gifted offensive players in the history of the sport. That's what I call it. Kyrie Irving is better than Ben Simmons. We want to break down each other's games. Ben Simmons is a lockdown defender. Ben Simmons was afraid to shoot in the playoffs last year. Ben Simmons was right in front of the basket and said, I'm afraid. Ben Simmons can't hit a free throw. Ben Simmons is a liability. I have zero interest in Kyrie Irving for Ben Simmons. The Brooklyn Nets have zero interest in Kyrie Irving for Ben Simmons. There are no rumors about Kyrie Irving being traded. Rumors would mean like there's some little tiny bits of truth to it. There's no truth to it. Zero. It doesn't even bother me. If you hear any anger in my voice, you're reading into it. I have none because I'm not concerned. I'm not trading Kyrie Irving. The Nets are not trading Kyrie Irving. And there's nothing there. There's nothing to it. I make myself clear? Good. I feel good now. Let's go to Javier in Union City. What's up, Javier?
Hey, good morning, Evan. How you doing?
I'm good. Good morning to you, sir.
Listen, Evan, first of all, I've been listening to this radio station since 1989. Okay.
Beautiful.
And I have a beef with you. Okay.
You've got a beef with me? Uh-oh.
Yes. Yes. You did respect the Rojas. Okay. So bad on your radio station that I had to say after 32 years, I have to say I cannot listen to his garbage.
Well, I apologize you feel that way. What specifically did I say or do that you deemed disrespectful?
The way that you behave. You behave like a 5-year-old child.
You mean when we interviewed him or the way I talk about his managerial decisions? Which
no, 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 no. When you talk on the radio station by yourself, that's fine. You can say whatever you want. When you interview him 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
You did a horrible job. You behaved like a 5-year-old, Evan.
I apologize
way,
you feel that
way. I follow you on Twitter.
Yes.
I already blocked you out, by the way.
You blocked me? You blocked me for that, Javier?
Yes. Wow. Because the next day, I thought you would talk about it on the radio station.
Right.
As soon as Greg got you and talked to you a little bit,
yeah,
you changed your side. Okay? So I said, you know what? That's it. I'm done. So I changed your
Listen,
radio
man.
Station.
Javier, I apologize you feel that way. Look.
No,
what I tried to do was be honest as a fan with him, all right?
No, ask the tough questions.
Of course, go ahead.
Can I say something?
Yes.
You guys always judge. You were just talking about the Nets, right? You guys always judge them as athletes, and they make a lot of money. They're supposed to behave this way. They professional. Guess what? You make a lot of money. You're supposed to be a professional. Stop being a fan there and be a professional first.
Well, I think you can be both. I strive to be both, which is sort of professional, not fully professional, but also a fan. Look, here's the deal, man. I apologize you feel that way. I mean, what can I tell you? Last week or a few days ago, I felt like I asked similar probing questions about his decisions. I tried to hold back a little bit. I didn't yell and interrupt him as much as I did. So, look, I can't say you're wrong. If you're mad about the way I interviewed him 2 weeks ago, that's fine. I respect that. I mean, what do you want me to tell you? I apologize you feel that way. Is that a fair apology? But as a fan, which ultimately I am, and that's what we do on the air. We are the fan. I tried my best, and I can't say everybody was happy with it. I can't say everybody hated it. I got a lot of people who said that was great. I got a lot of people who were pissed off. I admit that. I own that. I tried to do the best I can interviewing him. And yes, I was probably acting like a child. I'll own that, which I do plenty of times, by the way. But I just wanted to question him about some of the decisions that he has made. And quite frankly, he's not a very good manager. And one thing I did notice last night, you know, not that I want to sit here talking about the Met game last night. Luckily, I have not. I have not said anything about the Met game last night other than the fact I went. And I went to avoid traffic driving home, and I sat there for 4 hours. The only Mets I've talked about is the future. But I'll say one thing about the game. I thought it was very telling that Taiwan Walker essentially ripped the manager after the game when he came out and said, I could have gone longer. It is what it is. I feel like Taiwan Walker felt a little free to say how he felt about that, which was, let me stay in this game. Let me take my at-bat in the fifth inning and let me come out and pitch the sixth inning. I thought that was interesting. But the truth is, Luis Rojas is probably not going to be the manager next year. But my apologies to Ha. He blocked me on Twitter. I was that offensive to him that he blocked me. I haven't blocked anybody on Twitter in years. I think I used to back in the day. And then I was like, what the hell? Why? Who cares? You can say whatever the heck you want to me. I don't really care. I should go back and look and see if I still have people blocked and like unblock them. Because I literally haven't done it in a half a decade. It literally has been, if there's a date attached to it where it can show you when you blocked them, I can prove myself correct. Is there a feature where you can do that? I don't even know where to go, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you could see who you have blocked.
Where do I go to do that?
I think you have to go into like the settings tab and go through there.
Oh God, I'm so confused.
It's a whole process.
This isn't worth it. I mean, I was intrigued for a second, and then I'm like, it's not worth it. Can I take another call, Big Zoo, or do I have to go to a break?
We could get a quick call in here.
Look at Big Zoo. He's a man of the people, ladies and gentlemen. And he was at the Met Gala last week shirtless. How about that?
Looking fresh, if I do say so myself.
Damn right. Let's go to Dan in Tom's River. Hey, Dan.
Hey, what's going on, Evan?
What's up, man?
It's got a couple questions. Not questions, but what the hell is going on with the Giants?
What a question. I think right now it starts with the defense and it starts with Patrick Graham. I think that's the first question I'd start with when I look at, all right, 2 weeks in, what the heck's going on with the Giants? How did a unit that looked so good last year look so bad so far 2 weeks in? And look, missing and losing Dalvin Tomlinson is a big blow. And I think if anybody that's going to affect Leonard Williams, whose name you've barely heard outside of that dopey graphic they put up comparing Leonard Williams to Aaron Donald. But James Bradbury last year was all pro. He was awesome last year. And through 2 weeks, he hasn't. Blake Martinez, it feels as if Blake has missed more tackles this year than he did all of last year. Can that switch? Can Patrick Graham's unit get better quick? Sure. We all remember 2007. Not that I want to sit here comparing this team to 2007, but what'd they give up? 85, 90 points in the first 2 weeks that year? And obviously they fixed their defense pretty well. But when you ask what's wrong with the Giants, I guess that's the first thing that pops into my mind. We'll get you set for week two in fantasy. Brad Evans, who I haven't talked to in a while, he is a fantasy football expert, will join me in a couple of minutes, and some quick thoughts on Jets-Patriots. Evan Roberts here on the Fan Yankee pregame coming up soon.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM, the Fan, WFAN.
It's noon 01 on the Fan, our final couple of minutes together. You want to know why? Because there's a Yankee game today. A little afternoon baseball at Yankee Stadium. The Yankees, the Cleveland Indians. You'll hear the voice of the Yankees, John Sterling and Susan Wallman, coming up in a little bit. For all you fantasy football fans out there, I'm with you. I need help too. All right? We're not alone. And talking fantasy football on this Saturday is brought to you by Wallhour Paint, Hardware, and Design. Celebrating 100 years, visit shop.wallhour.com. I haven't talked to this guy in like a year. Brad Evans. Brad, good to talk to you. How you been, pal?
Evan, it's been a minute, my man. I am splendid. How you doing?
Well, I decided to draft Ezekiel Elliott this year. So for me and anyone else, should we be calm that last Thursday was, you know, take a deep breath, things will be fine? Or if others like me drafted Ezekiel Elliott, should we be seriously worried?
Yeah, no reason to push the panic button at all. Look, Zeke is in store for a bounce-back week. If you like points, if you like crooked numbers on the scoreboard, if you like end zone jigs, you're going to get a ton of them in this game between the Chargers and the Dallas Cowboys. And I think Zeke's going to get back to his customary workload that we've seen in years past. You know, somewhere around 16 to 18 total touches, maybe upwards of 20 total touches in this one. Look what the Chargers did last week against the Fighting Footballs. Antonio Gibson on 23 touches eclipsed the century mark in total yardage. So I think he's going to find the end zone. I love the over on his rush yards props, by the way, in the mid-50s. I think it's a suppressed number. And I think you're going to be feeling all fine and dandy come Monday morning knowing that Zeke is back and in full effect.
Is there anyone, because I think what we normally do is we overreact to week one, not just in fantasy, but in football in general. Is there anything out of week one that gave you legitimate concerns moving forward fantasy-wise?
Yeah, well, look, there's a number of issues that are out there in offensive lines. And one in particular that really stood out to me that I was astonished by the underperformance was in Minnesota. I mean, Dalvin Cook had 20 carries, just 61 yards on the ground. Now, of course, he can always boost the bottom line with his receiving production, but it was an eyesore. And Minnesota's got all kinds of problems right now. Defensively, they got a number of marquee players going to be sidelined this week. You're traveling to the desert to face Arizona, which sizzles against the Tennessee Titans in week number one. And, of course, Chandler Jones had his way defensively in that game, recording 5 sacks. So, you know, I think Minnesota has got a mountain to climb to gain any kind of respectability in my mind. And, you know, we always preach volume is everything in fantasy, and it's certainly going to apply to Dalvin Cook. But I'm backtracking a little bit. You know, I was down on him because he always misses a couple of games every single year anyway, and I didn't want to, you know, shell out a likely number two or number three overall pick to acquire his services. But, you know, when the dust settles here, if they don't start standing dudes up in the trenches, it could be some disappointing efforts consistently for Dalvin Cook this year.
Do you look at Josh Allen? I know the Steelers are a tough opponent, but do you look at Josh Allen and say, if you drafted him with expectations he was going to put up similar or the same numbers as last year, maybe you made a mistake thinking that? What do you think of him?
Yeah, look, I think he's going to be fine. And, you know, that game was odd. You know, the Steelers came in with a lot of question marks, obviously, about their offensive line. Most prognosticators, me included, you know, felt they were at least a bottom five, if not the worst unit in the league. And they did a decent job against this Bills pass rush. And, you know, maybe not so much in terms of run blocking based on the depressed numbers of Najee Harris, but that could also been credited to a rookie and having first game jitters. But, you know, look at Josh Allen. He's still got Stephon Diggs. He got Cole Beasley heavily involved in the pass game. So, you know what Beasley's going to bring to the table as a slot guy. He had 13 targets in week one. They got Devin Singletary going, which was an odd development because they refused to run in the preseason, and all indications suggested they were probably going to throw it 65% of the time, much like last year. And the thing about Josh Allen is it's all about duality, right? I mean, he is going to get opportunities near the goal line, will call his own number, and fall forward. Big body guy, similar to Cam Newton, just as efficient as Cam was last season inside the red zone as a rusher with the Patriots. Allen will be this year with the improved accuracy. Again, take a chill pill, stay the course. It's going to be easily a top five, if not a top three quarterback performance year, week in and week out this season for Josh Allen.
We're talking a little fantasy football with Brad Evans. Eli Mitchell, I think, was the most claimed guy on waivers this week, whether it's waiver order or the fake money that you have to use. What are your expectations? Obviously, Mostert being hurt is the reason, but what are your expectations now for Eli Mitchell moving forward for anyone who was lucky enough to get him?
There's a lot of question marks, and this is one of the primary storylines everybody in fantasy land is going to be following and following very closely. You know, how much work will Eli Mitchell really get in this backfield? Yeah, talking to a couple of San Francisco beat writers this week, they all gave me the indication, look, he performed so well last week that he right now is entrenched atop the RBBC pecking order. Now, Trey Sermon's going to be active for the first time after he was a healthy scratch last week. We'll see how much work he gets. My guess is anywhere between 8 to 11 touches, but I think Mitchell's going to get at least 13 to 15. Now, the matchup's not delightful by any stretch of the imagination, traveling to Philly. I faced Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham, who did a masterful job of just really bludgeoning the offensive line of the Atlanta Falcons last week. So we'll see what he can do, but he's got a top-10 offensive line in his own right. And, you know, I think Mitchell on 13 to 15 touches, if he's anywhere close to the efficiency that he showed last week with a 3.84 yards of the contact per attempt number, you're looking at a top 20 performer here in week number two. So I'm confident he'll be at least an RB2. But again, keep your eyes on Sermon, down a kid who fits this system to a T with his one cut and go style.
Any worries about Aaron Rodgers, or would you just kind of throw that out as just a week one debacle?
Yeah, as Aaron Rodgers would say, R-E-L-A-X. I mean, I'm not worried. It was a debacle. And, you know, I think mentally this entire team was still on Waikiki Beach sipping Mai Tais in front of the Royal Hawaiian. And, you know, I think they're going to get their druthers back, their feet underneath them. And what better matchup to do it against? It's a Hello Kitty to Detroit, for crying out loud. Aaron Rodgers will go out and throw at least three touchdowns on Monday Night Football. Everything will be right in the world. Davante Adams will get his. Aaron Jones will get his. Robert Tunyon will probably get his. And Rodgers will look like the MVP from last season. So, no, I am not in the least bit concerned about him. But then again, Evan, I'm a Bears fan, and I'm used to Aaron Rodgers just beating the crap out of my team week in and week out.
That is fair. You've got Aaron Rodgers, you know, your whiplash. You're used to it from right. All that. Do you, you know, Christian Kirk's on, I think is on everybody's, or is on a roster. I don't think he's a free agent. He had a 2-touchdown game. Obviously, Kyler Murray was awesome week one against the Titans. One of the surprises of week one, I think, how they slaughtered them. How about Kirk moving forward? I mean, he's got a lot of weapons there, but 2 touchdowns. What do you think about Kirk moving forward if you're debating starting him at wide receiver?
Good luck trying to figure out when he's going to boom again. I think he's going to be a king of inconsistency, going to be very hard to peg week in and week out with all the weapons in this Arizona offense. The one guy I find most intriguing, and we know what DeAndre Hopkins can bring to the table, that goes without saying, but Rondale Moore is a pocket rocket, man. You know, I watched him at Purdue, had one of the greatest freshman seasons in the history of college football. Was, you know, battered by injuries, you know, and the hamstring issues in subsequent years. But he's a guy that was heavily involved in week one, and I think he is going to have a banner week two. You know, week one, the 5 targets, 4 catches, 68 yards. And again, this Minnesota secondary is in shambles right now. They're missing a lot of key players and the pass rush as well. I think Kyler Murray is going to go nuts tomorrow, and I think Rondale Moore could be one of the surprise sensations everybody is talking about in fantasy come Monday.
Najee Harris was probably, I'd say, like late first-round pick for a lot of people. Late first-round pick as a rookie. Very quiet week one. Wasn't targeted a lot in the passing game. Didn't do much on the ground. What do you think of Najee one weekend?
Get-right game for him, quite honestly. I mean, it's Vegas. And, you know, one of the weaknesses, and many of us have predicted this, and it came to fruition in that classic Monday night game against Baltimore, is the fact that they are deficient up front. And, you know, they're going to get steamrolled by the run early and often much of this season. And I think this is a prime opportunity for Najee Harris to go out there and say, I deserve to be a top 10 running back in fantasy football. I am worthy of your first-round draft choice and confidence in me. You know, the fact that he played, I think, was 100% of the snaps. I mean, that is a very positive sign. He is clearly going to be the workhorse guy. Volume is king in fantasy, and he's wearing a bejeweled crown. So I'm not worried about it. I would say confidently minimum 80 combined yards, and I think he finds the end zone for the first time tomorrow. So, yeah, definitely all in. I'm buying on everything Najee Harris this week.
What defense would you advise someone to stream this week if that's how they play it?
Well, I mean, obviously Green Bay makes a ton of sense against Jared Goff. Though Jared was actually not so Goff in that near-storied comeback against San Francisco last week. They're in the mix, obviously. And Arizona, as I mentioned, too, you know, I think Minnesota's going to struggle. Again, the pass protection issues, the run blocking issues, I think they're going to get just, you know, blitzed out of the building in the first half, as I mentioned, due to the lack of bodies defensively, at least ones that are proven. And, you know, Chandler Jones is a man possessed, you know, coming up that 5-sack game. You know, they're still widely available right now in Yahoo leagues. I think it's absurd. So Arizona definitely tops the list for streaming defenses for me.
What'd you think of my boy Zach Wilson on Sunday? Were you impressed, especially in the second half, or not really?
Yeah, I did. I came away, and, you know, I would say admirable. That would be the adjective I would apply to him. A commendable effort overall. You know, getting Corey Davis involved. Corey Davis is great, by the way. Very impressed. Now, we'll see just how far along Zach Wilson is against Bill Belichick tomorrow. But, you know, if he goes out there and throws another 250 with a couple of touchdowns, even if he has a turnover or two against New England, You got to be feeling all warm and fuzzy as a New York Jets fan about the future of this franchise. They just need to figure out, A, their secondary, and B, who the heck's going to get the football in that backfield with that three-headed ferret at running back right now. They need a true blue pounder, a hammer to step up and really seize the reins, and I don't think they have one on roster right now. Maybe Michael Carter can be that guy eventually, but right now he's certainly a work in progress.
Well, the one thing going for the Jets is they've actually allowed their young future franchise quarterback to play. Your team you root for is still delaying the inevitable about Justin Fields. Why? I mean, what is going on there?
Because Matt Nagy's a raging nincompoop, Evan. I don't understand it, man. I mean, I'm one of those guys that would just badger him repeatedly if I was in the front row and he was within earshot of me at a Bears game. And just like, what are you doing right now? You can't win with Andy Dalton. But then again, people would be like, hey, it's the Andy Dalton revenge game this week because he's playing in Cincinnati. But that leash has got to be short on Dalton. I think if he makes an early mistake, the hook's going to come out, and then you're going to see Justin Fields insert the starting lineup, and the rest is going to be history. He just brings in a completely different element, as we all know, with the duality of this offense. He's got a rocket cannon arm. I think his reads and progressions are better than what scouts discredited him for when he came out of Ohio State. I mean, it's only a matter of time, and that time could be in the second half tomorrow against Cincinnati, but the one saving grace the Bears is my boy Mandatory Montgomery getting it done, and I think he's going to throw another 100 yards and a touchdown.
There you go. Brad, always good talking to you, man. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Hey, good luck to you and your Jets, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, pal. Brad Evans doing a little fantasy football talk. We'll have time to get to a call or two coming up. Yankee baseball right around the corner. They take on the Indians. Evan Roberts here on The Fan. Obviously, we've talked a lot of Giants the last few days. We'll get more into the Jets on Monday after the game against New England. And I may regret saying this because I have in the past. I actually feel really good about the game tomorrow afternoon. The biggest surprise for me coming out of week one was how that secondary held up, how well Brandon Echols played, how well Michael Carter played. Not the running back Michael Carter, the corner Michael Carter, how well Bryce Hall played. Like with all that youth and experience, inexperience in their secondary, I thought they played really well. Their defensive line played well. John Franklin Myers was everywhere. So, I don't know, maybe based on one game, I actually believe, wow, Saleh can get the most out of this D. But I expect them to keep it close, obviously facing a fellow rookie quarterback in Mac Jones, who played pretty well in week one. I feel good about this. Even took them with the points in our NFL pick segment. But we'll see, and obviously we'll spend a lot of time on it on Monday. Giants have been the focus coming off that debacle Thursday. Let's go to Diego in East Meadow. What's up, Diego?
Evan, welcome back, man.
Good to be here. How are you?
Good. Well, I've been better, but I'm used to it after 5 years. Just a quick second. I just want to say I know that other guy said he's not going to listen to you anymore. I thought that was one of the better interviews, and I'm not even a Mets fan because as fans, like, that's what we want to hear. We want to hear the fan questions, not whatever scripted, but that's a subject for
I appreciate
day.
It. I know interviews like that are always going to be hot or cold. Some people will love it, some people will hate it, and that's totally fine. But I appreciate the words, Diego. Thank you.
So back to the disgrace of the organization, that is the Giants. Something that I don't think is being said enough is that over the last few years, the one common denominator is Mara and Tisch. Like, we've been through McAdoo, we've been through Shermer, now we've been through Judge, we've been through Gettleman. They've just lost touch with what they need to do as a team. And you can say, you know, the Mets have hired guys that are out of character or something like that. This organization just keeps hiring losers, and that's basically what it's been. Like, the fact that they've had the worst record the last 5 years, and I don't think they realize that. I think they're just a player or a coach away from getting back to the top, which is not the case.
Well, their timeline has been so off. Like, they have this Hall of Fame head coach in Tom Coughlin. They have this Hall of Fame quarterback in Eli Manning. And they keep Jerry Reese. Then they move on from Jerry Reese. They move on from Tom Coughlin. They bring in Dave Gettleman. They get the wrong hire in Ben McAdoo. And it feels like the end of that run. And I know the Giants weren't winning a lot at the end with Eli and Tom. But the navigation from that era to the next has been bad. I mean, there's just no doubt. The coaching hires have been bad. So far, the GM hiring in Gettleman's part has been off. He is continuing to try to fix a problem that from the moment he took over, he was trying to address in this offensive line, though the line has played relatively well over the first 2 weeks, especially in pass protection. But one thing we know when we talked about the Mets and we talk about the Knicks, you're not firing the owner. The owner's here. The owner's got to figure it out. The thing about John Mara that I would like and would give me some confidence, despite how bad the last 5 years are, is he's not an owner that doesn't care about winning. He cares about winning. The problem is they've made bad decisions the last 5 years. I mean, it's been ugly. This has been an era of Giant football. I mentioned this on the air the other day. I'm too young to remember the 70s. I know full well about the 70s. I know how bad the football was in the 70s. I know about the commissioner having to get involved to basically say, all right, I'm giving you George Young because I'm going to turn your franchise around. That was bad. That's before my time. In my time walking the earth, this is the worst period of Giant football we've ever seen. By the way, it's also the worst period of Jet football we've ever seen. So look, on behalf of all New Yorkers, I'm sure we all would agree with this comment I'm about to make. Thank God for the Brooklyn Nets. No? You don't all agree with that? No, I tried. What can I tell you? Thank you to Connor Green. What a week Connor had. He's pitching for the Orioles. He's working at WFAN. That's a talented guy. Plus Big Zoo and plus all of you. Good to be back on Saturdays. I think I'm going to be doing it for a while. I'm not going anywhere. So I'll talk to you next Saturday, and I'll also talk to you Monday at 2 o'clock with Craig. The Yankee game is next. Enjoy it. Let's go Jets.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN, New York.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.